We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
On the Cowboy Sports Network, from Learfield IMG College, welcome to the Oklahoma Genetics Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics, bringing OSU's world-class wheat varieties to the farmers of the plains. Now, here's the voice of the Cowboys, Dave Hunziker.
Welcome to another edition of the Cowboy Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics. On the Cowboy Radio Network, I'm Dave Hunziker. Today, a very special treat, an extended conversation with Oklahoma State's new president, Dr. Casey Shrum. Before that, a word about one of Oklahoma State's outstanding new wheat varieties marketed through Oklahoma Genetics. Here's a wheat variety that can offer big yield numbers in the proper environment. It's Showdown, and it's marketed by Oklahoma Genetics and a part of Oklahoma State's outstanding wheat breeding program. Showdown is widely adapted from West Texas to Central Kansas, including the Oklahoma Panhandle. Showdown has a very high yield ceiling with good standability and responds well to grazing with adequate seeding density. Showdown also offers Hessian fly resistance. And Showdown is another Graze and Grain and Golden Grain OSU variety. To learn more about Showdown and other outstanding OSU wheat varieties, log on to okgenetics.com. We begin our conversation with Oklahoma State University President Dr. Casey Shrum after these messages. It's a Cowboy Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics from Learfield IMG College. It's a Cowboy Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics, and it's a real pleasure to sit down with Oklahoma State's 19th president, Dr. Casey Shrum, who is now the head of Oklahoma State University, the president of Oklahoma State, and congratulations. It's a real pleasure to be with you. We appreciate the time.
Thank you. It's great to be here this morning.
So far, so good, hopefully?
Yes. Yes. It's been a busy few weeks.
I'll bet.
A great few weeks. And it's just, you know, tremendous the amount of, you know, support and wonderful people that, you know, Darren and I have gotten to meet in just the short time we've been here.
You know, I hope you don't mind, but this is sort of my standard question to new athletic directors and so forth. It's sort of the John F. Kennedy question from 1960, mm-hmm. presidential election. What do you feel like makes you most qualified to do this job and do it well?
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe that with all the experiences, you know, that I've had in the past, it's really grown a lot of my leadership skills. And every situation I've been in, you know, you grow in some way through every experience. But having, you know, that that background, having, you know, been a product of Oklahoma State University, having a passion for OSU and the land-grant mission, you know, there's a lot of my life that is reflective in that.
Oh, no doubt.
And I think those, and having, you know, being a mother with children who've graduated from OSU or in the process, you know, I have insights and I think skills that I can bring to Oklahoma State University to, you know, my vision is for us to really be the land-grant university in the United States that people are looking to as the gold standard.
And a lot of that is happening now, and we'll jump into more of that in a bit. But it's interesting, and here's the thing, your background's pediatrics. So as a parent, that got my attention because as a parent of daughters who are now in college, who understands child development and where children are as they go to college more than a pediatrician, right?
Yeah. I think that training is hugely helpful to me, the development aspect of it, the skills that you learn in having conversations with, you know, adolescents and, you know, young adults about serious issues. Those are things that I, you know, did every day. And really talking to them about their future and encouraging them to kind of think further on. And like I said, really sometimes talking about very serious issues. So that skill, I think, is important. And just, you know, being, having an understanding of what those issues are and what they're facing today that's different even than, you know, my generation. And you know, we like to be America's healthiest campus. So I think my skill set really lends to that in a big way.
Boy, it does. And one of those issues, honestly, we know is mental health.
Absolutely.
And the pandemic has done nothing to help that, obviously. What role is reasonable for a college campus to play in the mental health of its students? What is practical?
Yeah. You know, I think that is a really good question that, you know, many universities are looking at and trying to struggle with today. I think we, in developing students and preparing them for a career, can really look at what are the skills that we need. I mean, sometimes there's obviously, you know, times where mental illness, you know, that's a disease process. And, you know, but all of us being trained to recognize those. But today, I think kids need a skill different than, you know, what we had and how we, you know, teach them to, you know, disconnect, recharge, how we talk about resilience, thinking about how we teach this, you know, the skill of gratitude, because we know when you're grateful for what you have, you're a happier person. But I think social media feeds so much into certain things that overall wellness, you know, can be challenging for them. And you added the pandemic with isolation and, you know, depression, and, you know, is real. Sometimes it's situational and sometimes it's chronic. But isolation really added to that in many ways. So, you know, encouraging and training everyone to recognize situations. I mean, all we can do is, you know, try to be the best prepared we can to intervene in situations, connect people with help, but really creating that sense of community so that, you know, everyone's seen.
Yeah, and part of that, obviously, that we couldn't help with the pandemic is trying to get people back into face-to-face classroom situations.
Absolutely.
Which can kind of get lost, but it goes back to what you're saying. We're human beings that are meant to be together by design, and so the classroom, I had to really ponder that as someone who just teaches one class, but that's important, right? In the social part, in helping with that.
Yes. And, you know, I think that's something that, you know, I always kind of joke, because when I come and hear previously and had an opportunity to take my kids to lunch or whatever. You know how that is. They bring their closest friends. So
of course.
When you have five kids, you got a pretty big crowd that you're buying meals for.
Yeah, so a lot of friends, a lot of adopted family.
That's right. So you get a little, you know, kind of like a small town hall and hear what the students are thinking.
Yeah.
And in a real way, because I'm just their friend's mom. And I think they were really surprised too. I mean, we've always thought this generation is more technology driven. Maybe they don't care about interacting. They really do. And they understand and want that community. And while they embrace, you know, online learning, they truly value that experience of being together and being in a classroom and being able to engage too. So it is, you know, very important. You know, even you go back to, you know, what is important in a college experience, and that's growing from other people and learning from others, and that social interaction helps us. It's that curriculum outside the classroom, and so they really need that.
It's fascinating. The generation today of young people is much more worldly and much smarter than we are. Mm-hmm. But I sometimes wonder if they have the life skills, sort of the built-up calluses to life mm-hmm. that we have as adults that help right. them put that information in the right place. So that's an mm-hmm. interesting – does that make sense?
Yes.
It's an interesting dynamic.
Right, exactly. I you know, because technology is different and the way they experience the world is different than the way that we did. And, you know, I think about when I went off to college and, you know, I was there trying to navigate the world – You had interactions that you just had to get through, and you failed quite a bit, but everybody was, and you just kept going, and that was just part of life. Today, you know, they have phones, they just call, and you know the opportunities for failure are lower, and we all learn and grow and build resilience through those times when we're not successful.
Oh, of course.
And you know, we only, you know, go back to this, we only truly fail when we stop. But it's I think sometimes harder for them when, you know, all we see on social media is the happy moments.
Oh, yeah.
When, you know, they're used to having that support like right in their pocket. You know, mm-hmm. you call somebody or you Google,
of
right?
course.
You know what to do because you can Google or you can call. And so that I think that's just it's just a different experience, and you know, the need to help with those skills that you're talking about that maybe we take for granted, that you know, we built just through the process of our days.
Sure.
They don't have those experiences. And so looking at it from that perspective is really important about, you know, what is it that we can provide for our college students that can be helpful to them in a career going forward, in their lives going forward, whether that's, you know, in their job or in their interactions with people or just in their daily lives and how they see the world and see themselves.
Yeah, it's also interesting. Full disclosure, I'm not sure there's a more, I don't know if there's a greater worry than when you step foot on a college campus
yeah.
as a freshman. I know how I felt.
Yeah.
You know, we've been through some things, but let's just be honest,
yeah.
that going onto a college campus and leaving home, oh my gosh,
yes.
That's a big moment, right?
Yes. You're just, we can all think back to that. You know, you're just this, you feel like this little person all of a sudden, and
you're
in the middle of a sea. And, you know, I think that's where, you know, we can try to be intentional to help people feel like they're being seen, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you can become immediately a part of a community, it makes that a little less scary and, you know, makes, you know, gives them the better opportunity to be successful and to stay and love what they're doing and grow here.
If you had to give a parent and perhaps a young person good advice as they try to embark on this college path, what would you tell them?
Yeah. You know, I've had the experience of coming to college myself, and now I've had the experience of having six kids go off to school. So I have a little bit of experience with this, and I think it, you know, depending on where you're at, you know, if it's your first kid, that's so hard because, you know, you're so worried, you want them to be successful, you don't know what they're doing. But I would, you know, tell the parents, you know, be supportive, be encouraging. Know that you've prepared your kids well for this moment, and we're here at Oklahoma State University to make sure that they're successful, and we want them to succeed as much as they want them to succeed. And so, you know, I know one of my kids really struggled and she always wanted to come home, and I would say, no, we're going to come visit you. Mm-hmm. If I have to, you know, so just being as supportive as you can and encouraging them, and, you know, knowing that it's going to be hard and you may get some phone calls, don't rescue, be supportive, and, you know, help them to find their way here, which is hard sometimes as a parent because you really don't want them pulling away. You can
right.
feel it. It's like, I don't know if I really want this to happen. But, you know, as a student, just give yourself a little bit of time, you know, get out there, realize that everyone else around you is feeling exactly the same way. It's an exciting time in your life and the possibilities are endless. And just know that there are going to be times where, you know, you're not going to feel confident or you're not going to feel like you're prepared. Everyone feels that way, and that's a part of growing. If you're not feeling that way at moments, you're not moving forward and growing as a person or even academically. So to just give themselves, you know, a little grace, know they're doing great, and that, you know, really a semester, once the semester's in, under your belt, you know, that just starts to build confidence in that they can do this.
And joining us now is Hannah Lindell. She's a master's student in the Plant and Soil Sciences Department at Oklahoma State, a Washington State Cougar, a graduate of Washington State, and we'll get into that in a moment. But you're doing weed science research, and that's very important, especially in the modern era of wheat production. So what has your research told us about the importance of using a lot of different strategies on the farm to produce a clean, weed-free Oklahoma wheat crop that is attractive to everyone involved?
So what we've discovered is when producers are trying to become more clean in their fields and more sustainable in their practices, we found that integrating either a delay in planting date, multiple uses of a ALS or different mode herbicides, as well as maybe even a different type of wheat variety, going off from either a Gallagher to an Iba or to a Showdown or any of the newer varieties that OSU has released or any of the varieties that producers use here in Oklahoma, we've seen that with all these practices kind of piled in together into a little soup type thing, we've seen that we have and are seeing good control of some of these prominent brome grass species like rescue grass, downy brome, true cheat, Japanese brome, and it's honestly amazing because last year we had delay in planting date and we didn't see any different yield effect based off of those planting date, but we were still seeing a very significant reduce in grass species depending on that delay of planting date. But as this year, as we know, we had that freeze in October, and then we got that freeze and that little weird blizzard in February, and then we got another freeze in April and March. And so we are seeing that there is a significance in wheat yield based off of those planting dates, but we're still kind of seeing a better control as we implement either a delay in planting date and then as well as application of a herbicide to kind of really suppress those species. So it's kind of great, and it's kind of given us a chance to show especially more conventional producers here in Oklahoma that there is another option and there's an upside mm-hmm. to a more cost-effective way to grow and produce a well and clean grain.
It's a long way from your hometown Quincy, Washington, and or Pullman, Washington, your alma mater for undergraduate, to Stillwater, Oklahoma. How did you end up here, and what attracted you to here?
Opportunities, honestly. I did undergraduate research under Dr. Ian Burke at Washington State, and when I told him I was interested in getting a master's degree in weed science, he said, hey, I've got a couple people. I've got a Dr. Nevin Lawrence up at University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and I've got Dr. Amisha Manicheri at Oklahoma State University, and they both were past students of his, and so I reached out to them. I came down here, and no offense to Nevin and University of Nebraska, it was beautiful, but didn't really feel it. But when I came down here to Oklahoma, I just loved everything about it. I love the atmosphere. I love the scenery. I love the fact that this university has allowed me to have opportunities where I get to meet amazing people such as you. Like,
thank you.
It's just, I've loved everything about Oklahoma since I've moved down here.
That's Hannah Lindell, graduate student in Plant and Soil Sciences at Oklahoma State University. More to come on the Cowboy Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics from Learfield IMG College. We continue on the Cowboys Summer Series as
we resume our conversation with Oklahoma State's new president, Dr. Casey Schrem. I asked Chad Weiberg this question from an athletic perspective, what he learned from COVID. So with all the things that you were involved in, what did you learn from it? We're still in it, obviously.
Yeah, but. I mean, to expect the unexpected, certainly, you know, that we're going to be making decisions in the moment without really the knowledge that we are traditionally used to having. Mm-hmm. We're used to making decisions, you know, based on what's previously happened or what's the standard. And so, you know, I tell people all the time, my experience, you know, with the state and the COVID response task force, and they ask me, you know, what was it like? The best analogy I can give is somebody giving you a roadmap and telling you, here's your destination, but all the major highways are shut down.
That's a good analogy.
So wow. Figure it out. And, you know, because everything that we were used to is not going to work. So I think being, you know, we've learned to be innovative, learned to, you know, really look at the world maybe a little bit differently and what's important than what we have in the past. We had an opportunity to slow down a little bit, and I think everyone enjoyed that. How we hold on to some of the things that have been good, I think is going to be a challenge. But I think, you know, it's been a lot of growing into the idea that, you know, we're going to make decisions today, and you have to be comfortable telling people, tomorrow I may be wrong.
Sure.
Today I'm making a decision, tomorrow I may be wrong. But this is the best set of information I have today, and being confident in those decisions.
It, you know, another part to that's, you know, I know a big point of emphasis for you is, you know, making this a, you know, an example land grant institution with a futuristic approach.
Yes.
And I'll share a story with you. Dr. Brett Carver might be the best wheat breeder on the planet as part of the Ferguson College of Agriculture, world class at what he does. We were doing an interview last June, and he's developed all these wheat varieties resistant to disease.
Yes.
So he says to me, he says, Dave, and this is off the air. He didn't. I asked him. He doesn't care if I share this story. So I had permission. They've got the vaccine. I know they have the vaccine. They have to go through all the work to get it approved. And this is like in July. He said, it's basically the same concept that I use in wheat breeding. There are some differences, but it's the same thought process, which to me goes hand in hand with what your vision is, this blending of resources and different disciplines and academics to really push the world into an even better, make it a better place. I mean, does that make sense?
Absolutely.
I mean, that kind of goes hand in hand with what you want, right?
Yes, it is. And if you think about the, you know, pandemic center, for innovation and excellence, OSU has this just unique in my perspective, you know, with a medical school, with agriculture, with vet med, with the expertise we have in arts and sciences, to bring from our own perspective insights that can, you know, change the world. And, you know, kind of going back to that, today we make a decision and we have to be comfortable being wrong, you know, if things change. I think we should always be challenging ourselves and thinking about, well, just because we've done something this way for a long time doesn't mean that's the way it has to be. And sometimes, you know, kind of getting out there and thinking about things differently, you know, one moment people can be looking at you, you know, conspicuously, and then the next moment, you know, you're winning a Nobel Prize.
Yeah, it's usually how it works.
That's right. And so, you know, I think we have the ability to, you know, bring unique resources together in ways to solve problems that we haven't, because we all bring some, you know, some expertise, some new way of looking at a problem from the way we've somewhat solved it in our own disciplines. And when we can, I mean, I think bringing that together is really unlocking, you know, the power of Oklahoma State University.
It seems like the pandemic forced us not to think out of the box, but almost destroy the box.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Everything that you would naturally go back to, like, this is how we've done it. Let's see if that works. No, that does not work. That's not going to happen. Having to think and put, you know, things together that normally didn't go together or try things in a new way was acceptable because that's what we had to do. And I think if you look at the testing capabilities in the state of Oklahoma, OSU was instrumental, the leader in allowing Oklahoma to open up their economy and get back to work, because we took, you know, medicine and an existing genomics lab with the Oklahoma Animal Diagnostic Laboratory that, you know, high fidelity genetic testing in animals. It's the same equipment, the same concept, and we brought, you know, lab folks over from the medical school and created a human genomics diagnostic lab. And, you know, but that's, like you said, destroying the box. You can't just think, well, that's vet medicine, those are animals. What does that have to do with the pandemic? I mean, it's that expertise that we can utilize to make a difference.
Dr. Casey Shrum, Oklahoma State's new president, is with us. Rural health, going back to your time with the Center of Health Sciences as president and outreach and making sure there's quality health care in rural communities is a big part of your background. But taking that a step further, as we've kind of gone through this tough time as an American society, there trust is an issue, obviously. Mm-hmm. It's a tough issue. How important is it for Oklahoma State, and obviously Extension has always played a role in this, but for us to spend even more time in person with farmers, with people that work in various industries who are Oklahoma State graduates, spending time with them, if nothing else, to enhance the trust that mm-hmm. we're not just sitting here in our academic world in Stillwater and out of touch, but rather we're trying to help their lives become better? How important mm-hmm. is that?
Well, I've often said, and I think it's true, the most important thing you can do as a leader is listen. So I think the university having that land grant mission and connection to rural communities, to the agriculture industry, to many industries, the most important thing we can do as a university is listen. If you're not listening, you might not be solving the right problems.
That's true.
And you can learn so much from listening. You know, as a physician, they teach you to do a history. And part of getting a good history and talking is because if you ask the right questions, people give you the answers. Mm-hmm. And so to me, you know, in any position, listening and learning, that's how we get the right solutions. That's how we make a difference. And you're right. I think because of, you know, everything that's been going on, people question, you know, is this true? Is, you know, what should we listen to? Who should we listen to? Is this right? And I do believe that Oklahoma State University is a trusted, you know, brand and a place to get, you know, information and knowledge that can be trusted here in the state of Oklahoma and in the world. So it is very, very important to be listening and to be building relationships. And, you know, we can all get really busy and forget that, you know, the most important thing we can do is build relationships. I think, look, the Cherokee Nation, you know, with our first tribally affiliated medical school in the United States, that was, you know, came about from listening and understanding, you know, what a vision was and how we could jointly work together to solve a problem. That is the importance of relationships.
Yeah.
You know, we listen and we trust people who are invested in us.
We'll take a break, come back with more in a moment with Dr. Casey Shrum, and this is the Cowboys Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics from Learfield IMG College. We continue on the Cowboys Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics from Learfield IMG College and visiting with Oklahoma State's new president, Dr. Casey Shrum, who played collegiate softball mm-hmm. and pitched as
yes.
well as played a lot of other positions.
Yes.
That's usually how that works.
Yes.
They work their way into pitcher. So I'll start with this.
Mm-hmm.
Can you compare pitching to being the leader of a major university? And here's why. As a pitcher, you always have to be a step ahead. You have to be someone who can execute as well as think.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any comparison between being a leader and being a good pitcher?
Absolutely. I think so. You know, the one thing you learn as a pitcher is that your team is important, because regardless of your – performance, everybody else matters, and that win or that loss is behind your name in the paper.
That's a great point.
And so you want the best people around you, and you know, if somebody makes an error, you don't want to look at them and shake your head or in disgust. You want them to, you know, you want them to shake that off, get up, and let's go, and let's win. And I think, as, you know, in this role, that's true too. I mean, I really look at my team of people, well, I said it, as a team. My, you know, the folks that are working around me, that's my leadership team. And, you know, I think you do learn a lot from athletics in that I can use in this role. And as you said, as a pitcher, you know, you touch the ball every play, and people are depending on you every game. And it's, you know, going back to a teammate making a mistake, you know, as a pitcher, you make a mistake, you walk a batter, you're still there. You know, you just keep looking forward to the next, you know, focus on the next pitch and keep your eye focused on what you're trying to do. And I think the same thing is, you know, true of fans in the stadium. You know, I mean, people are going to talk, and when you're pitching, you don't even listen to the people in the stands. And honestly, as I was playing ball, I got to where, you know, I could hear my dad's voice, or I had a teammate, her dad had a really distinct voice, and he was always real positive. And those are the people that you hear. And so I think, you know, that's true of, you know, being a leader. You know, you get to choose who you're going to, you know, listen to. It's not that you shouldn't, you know, listen to criticisms or learn from those, but to be successful, you know, you need to focus on, you know, what's ahead of you, and, you know, kind of drown out the dissenting voices and keep going forward.
And as the pitcher, you're on display all the time. So you're the focal point.
Yes.
So body language matters. There's nothing worse as a second baseman than the pitcher that kicks the rubber and storms around because you didn't get to a ball. And it's not an error, it's a base hit. And so it goes on your ERA.
Yeah.
So that's important, too. But going back to that same comparison, you're on display, center of attention, and the body language matters.
Yeah. Being calm in the moment and being confident regardless of what's going on in your team. As I was saying, you know, if you're standing up there pitching and, you know, you have the bases loaded and two outs, you know, a ground ball, you need an out. So you can either strike them out or pop it up, or a ground ball is an out, right?
Right.
You just have to trust the people around you that, you know, they're doing the exact same thing, and have calm and confidence in that moment, because if you see a pitcher get rattled, the rest of the team gets rattled.
Oh, of course. Seen it many times. Dr. Casey Schrum is with us, and it is an interesting time as you come in as Oklahoma State's president in college athletics the last year and a half. So many changes.
Yes.
And so just in general terms, Are you concerned about the future of college athletics? I mean, where do you see things right now? There's just so much going on. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. You know, there is a lot going on. I tend to be, you know, an optimist and look at the positives of things. I think you can look at the history of college athletics and how much, you know, people embrace college athletics and how that's, you know, a benchmark in a lot of athletes' lives. And I think there's sustainability and continued excitement. And, you know, we have to navigate new waters. And, you know, I find myself, you know, learning more every day and in trying to understand, again, you know, this is a moment in time where we're going to have to think outside of the box and do what's best for our college athletes and for the university. And really, you know, it's kind of a moment of uncertainty, just like we have in the pandemic, and saying, look, we're going to make decisions with the data that we have today and the knowledge that we have today. And, you know, we may have to correct course going forward. We just don't, I mean, so much is happening. We don't have all the information, I think, yet.
And I think sometimes all of us who have worked in it a long time, and even those who have played, I think we are sometimes a bit naive. We get caught up in our worlds and don't really think about the big perspective. But when you add all this up, you know, salaries for coaches have gone exponentially high. We've built across college athletics these huge facilities. But another part to this that doesn't get talked about is suddenly student athletes at the major college level really couldn't go home in the summer. Mm-hmm. They had to be here all the time. So I guess my point is we had to assume this would be the logical move at some point as all of these other things took off, right? I mean, you would feel like at some point you might land in this area because you can kind of see everything lining up, I guess. Yeah,
it probably, you know, is a progression that, you know, if you're watching it closely, you can see it moving in that way. You know, I guess, you know, traditionally you think about college athletics as kind of the, you know, love of the, you're playing, you know, it's the love of the sport. It's this protected area. But as you said, it's kind of progressing more and more in a direction that's different than, gosh, when I played. I mean, you know, the experience is different. And, you know, the really what a college athlete goes through is so different. So to expect that, you know, their experience is going to change, but not the expectation ever.
Yeah.
Not realistic.
No, and that's exactly what's happened. So what is the role of college athletics within a major university?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is, you know, what many people will know about Oklahoma State University or a major university is athletics. And it is that front porch for the university. That's the perspective, I think, of folks, you know, looking out and into the university. It's why some people will show up at OSU and end up, you know, wanting to get their college education here. It, for those college athletes, many of them, it's their opportunity to get an education and to improve their lives for the better, or to continue a sport that they love that may lead them to professional athletics. You know, for me, athletics was life-changing. I think athletics is, you know, it's really it is kind of the heartbeat of the university. It's what gets people excited about a university. It's what brings us together and creates those opportunities to gather. I mean, you know, you think about how families, you know, are bond. It's around activities. It's around things that we all like. We all like athletics. We all want the Cowboys and Cowgirls to win. And that brings us together as a family and unites, you know, that that alumni base and Oklahomans and fans across, you know, the United States with Oklahoma State University.
We continue our conversation with Oklahoma State University President Dr. Casey Schrum after these messages. This is the Cowboys Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics from Learfield IMG College.
We're with Dr. Casey Schrum, Oklahoma State University President, on the Cowboys Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics. And if in a few minutes left, if someone would have told you, let's say 20 years ago, you'd be sitting in this chair doing this, what would your reaction be?
Well, laugh. I would have never imagined it, not 20 years ago, you know. 20 years ago, I'm trying to think what I was even doing then. Gosh, I mean, no, definitely not then, and didn't see, you know, I always talk about, you know, my progression with Oklahoma State University, first as a student, and then as a faculty member, as an administrator, and how, you know, my perspective of Oklahoma State University changed each time. But I think my understanding of the land-grant mission and what we do, the depth of that understanding grew for me. And my love and respect for what we do has grown. And, you know, at that point in time, I would have never thought that I would have the opportunity or be prepared to, you know, have this job. But, you know, here we are today.
Yeah. You know, and really, as I understand it, you really didn't even know that you wanted to pursue medicine.
Right.
Until you were in college. Do
yes,
I have that right?
That is true. I wanted to pursue softball in college.
Well, like most everyone that wants to be a college athlete, that's how it usually works.
Exactly. And then you get there and they're like, well, you got to figure out what you're going to do in life. And, you know, but the great thing about my parents, you know, they impressed upon me that having a scholarship was a privilege. and that because someone is investing in you and believing in you, you get out there and you give 110% on the field, and you do the same thing in the classroom, and you'll figure out what you love, you know, figure out what you love, and, sure, and then go that path. I had a college professor who, you know, asked me to stay afterwards and told me I had the highest grade in his class, and was I going to go to medical school?
What class was it?
Physiology.
Oh my gosh.
And it really wasn't anything, you know, I guess in, you know, my mind as, you know, a young person having, you know, grown up in a rural community, I don't know, I guess I just thought doctors were born, you know, I mean, I don't know, there were certain people who were just, you know, automatically smart enough, and
well, I kind of felt that way growing up in a small town, I get it.
Yeah, I mean, we had like one or two doctors in our town, and, you know, so it wasn't something I had considered, and that, you know, moment was really transformative for me in somebody other than my parents always told me, you can do anything you want to do. I mean, no one ever told me, you can't do that. I mean, my parents, well, they did tell me you can't do that. I did a lot of things I should. I better clarify, my mom might hear this. But, I mean, as far as what I wanted to pursue in life, you know, you can do anything you want. So, you know, it's really about, I mean, and I think that's the great thing about Oklahoma State University. It's a great thing about being a college athlete, is you have the opportunity for people to open your mind to what you are truly capable of in a way that you would have never imagined could be.
Yeah, mentors matter.
Yes, they
don't
do.
Don't they?
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And, you know, that's the thing that I have really enjoyed. I've gotten the opportunity to, you know, went to the College World Series with the softball team, you know, got to interact with them, you know, just meeting with students, being able to talk to them, encourage them, kind of give back from that one moment that changed my life. Hopefully, you know, one of these interactions changes somebody's life, and they do amazing things. So
you have six children, three of mm-hmm. which you adopted from Ethiopia.
Yes. Yes.
Not many people do that.
Well,
not many people have six children. Not many people are willing to sort of jump off that cliff to bring someone into their family from across the world.
Yeah.
What's that experience been like? I mean, what have been the rewards of that?
Yeah. Well, I will say when we did that, we really thought that, you know, we're going to make a difference in the lives of these boys, which we did. And you know, just tremendously blessed them. What you realize going through adoption and going through that process is they have given so much more back to us. And I have learned so much from them that I could not have even imagined. Just about seeing the world through somebody else's eyes, about, you know, being courageous. Because, you know, you talk about them bringing them here. My goodness, I mean, they got on an airplane with us and came to, you know, a country they've never been to before, trusting us in that moment and trusting us that we were going to protect them and love them. You know, you just, I don't know. I mean, everything I thought probably, you know, is different today than what I thought I was doing in a positive way. And I, you know, it's not always been easy, but it's like anything else. You know, you're committed and you learn a lot about unconditional love, a lot about, you know, supporting people through whatever situation they're working through. You don't always understand it, but you know, they know you're there and you're always going to be there regardless of what happens. And, you know.
Final thought, you are the first female president of Oklahoma State University.
Yes.
And, for example, as we recorded this last night, the first Major League Baseball telecast, Major League Baseball game telecast of all women broadcasters, one of which is a is a friend. Huge deal. And as is your situation. So the walls continue to be broken down as mm-hmm. far as women in leadership is concerned. What does it mean to you that you are the first female president of Oklahoma State?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I, you know, kind of going into that, I'm not always as aware of, you know, you're the first female doing this, because, you know, I've never really allowed what people's expectations of me to define what I'm going to do.
Of course.
I just, you know, and, but having said that, you know, getting the job, and you know, my niece, you know, she's so excited. She's, you know, 12, and she's like, she told her mom, she's like, Aunt Casey is a boss lady.
and, oh, to say the least, yes.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, the excitement of that, and I really do hope that it you know, allows other people to, you know, see themselves in a way that perhaps they didn't, and to realize that, you know, other people really don't define what you can do and you can't do. If you allow them, they will.
Yeah.
If you're determined, but you know, being willing to put in the time, and you know, I think to go back to, you know, what my dad always says is, you know, sacrificing for a long-term goal. You have to be committed to getting the experience to be the most prepared to get that. And sometimes I think as a female, it's hard. We have different challenges. You know, having kids sometimes pulls people out. I mean, there are just so many different, you know, aspects to that that can make it challenging. Hopefully we, you know, I was very fortunate to always have people that supported me and allowed me to stay, pursue, and still feel like, you know, I'm being a great mother at the same time. So, you know, having that perspective and, you know, seeing Darren support me, I hope that sets a different standard, and how comfortable we are with that. I mean, you know, I think it's odd for other people, and sometimes they ask about it, but we've raised our family this way, our, you know, the entire time. And Darren had a very successful career, and at, you know, some point we made the decision that he was going to support me and the kids, and you know, that's what we were going to do together, and we did. So I think it's a tremendous honor to really have had the opportunity to build a career that puts me here, and that, you know, I'm the most qualified.
We appreciate the time. This was fantastic. We recognize how busy you are, but we really appreciate the chance to sit down and have an extended conversation, and looking forward to many more.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be here.
That's Dr. Casey Schrum. We're back with some final thoughts in a moment on the Cowboys Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics from Learfield IMG College. Back to wrap things up on our final edition of the Cowboys Summer Series, and we hope you've enjoyed them this series. And this Cowboys Summer Series made possible by our friends at Oklahoma Genetics, the marketing arm of Oklahoma State's world-class wheat breeding program. And here's a final word about one of their great varieties, this one named after the former first cowgirl. It's called Baker's Ann, and it's a great new winning wheat variety in northern Oklahoma. Baker's Ann, of course, honors the former First Lady Ann Hargis. It's a premium quality variety with high yield, grazability, and test weight potential, and it's preferred by millers. It's still one of OSU's earliest maturing varieties, and it provides top-tier protection against stripe rust and acidic soils. And Baker's Ann is another in OSU's Graze and Grain and Golden Grain varieties. Log on to okgenetics.com to learn more. Well, the season is not far away. Labor Day weekend will crank things up when what should be an exciting 2021 Oklahoma State football season. Until then, enjoy your month of August. We look forward to being with you very soon. This has been the Cowboy Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics from Learfield IMG College.
On the Cowboy Sports Network from Learfield IMG College, this has been the Oklahoma Genetics Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics, bringing OSU's world-class wheat varieties to the farmers of the plains. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Cowboy Sports Network.